Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
So how excited are you guys for Ultimate Wilderness? So because of the timing of announcements, this is like the first place where a lot of this information is ever going to be told. You guys.
So one of our goals in creating Ultimate Wilderness is through the design process, no pants.
Yeah, we have a caveman barbarian archetype that just doesn't have any pants. Also, at least one of the random things that we've set up here is close to being true.
I mean, I think there's a rage power literally called Naked Courage. So.
There is, and it's for the non-armored barbarian that Eric played in your game, right?
Sort of.
Yeah, but you gave him, like, extra armor because...
Eric was playing that character before the archetype happened, and Eric went to Jason and said, I need an archetype.
Right.
I'm your boss, put it in the book. It works pretty good.
Yeah. Well, no, it's funny, too, because I guess without this special item that Ostok had, it doesn't really have that much AC, the archetype. So Jason was probably like, I'm not giving you even more. I know how much stuff you have, Ostok. Because he still didn't die, right? Even to the end with all of the crazy lich stuff.
Yep. I gave out a lot of get-out-of-free cards, though. And it's not like I haven't killed Eric's characters off before.
So. Did he kill an Egyptian god to survive?
There were Egyptian gods killed.
Okay.
That's all I can say.
I blame Eric Bone.
All right, we ready to go?
All right.
Oh, okay. Starting this thing off?
Yeah. All right. So welcome to the Ultimate Wilderness Preview Chat Discussion Question Answer Revelation Panel.
Yep.
I'm James Jacobs. I'm the creative director for Pathfinder.
I'm Mark Seifter. I'm the Pathfinder design team.
And I'm Stephen Radney McFarlane, senior designer on the Pathfinder design team.
So
it's a book.
It's a book. It started with you.
It's going to be... Yeah. So once upon a time, you know, we have these meetings where we're like, well, we've done a lot of books. What should the next one be? Ultimate Intrigue dealt a lot with what you would find in a lot of city adventures, political intrigue and that kind of thing. And it just occurred to us that, well, we really haven't done anything with the wilderness yet. We've got bits and pieces that have settled in other books, and we've got a lot of really good material that is sitting in a lot of player companions and stuff. So why don't we wrap some of that up, add a whole bunch of new things, make a new class, something that people have been clamoring about, a shape-shifting sort of martial class that... we called the Shifter because we couldn't find a better name for it. The name was just perfect. And we're also so one of the things this is all stuff you can read on the website. But one of the things we're also putting in this book that's a little bit different than what we've done before is we've also got a new race section, which I'll just leave that hanging for right now because when I wrote the solicitation text for it, I forgot to put that in.
Yeah, it's not actually on the website
yet.
So
you guys actually get a really nice preview. But, so that's basically it. In some ways, it's much like the books you guys are used to. It's going to have a new class. It's going to have a bunch of new archetypes. A few reprint archetypes. And then we've got a nice section for those of you who like animal companions and familiars. And we've done a lot of good work in the player companion lines on that. We've taken a lot of that stuff, like what kind of item slots do these critters have, and we've blown that out and presented a whole bunch of new animal companions and familiars in its own massive chapter of just companion goodness. And then we've got a whole section on basically rule systems that you can use in Wilderness, everything from how to create more narrative exploration that still fits well with our exploration rules that were in Ultimate Campaign, to foraging and gathering poisons and a weather system, and then, you know, and then we wrap it up with smells and magic items. So that is the basic structure of the book. I know I have some favorite parts, but I, James, what are you, some of your favorite parts?
So it's finally quantified that if you are a lone adventurer, you need to kill 37 chickens to level up the second level. you can't kill butterflies. Butterflies don't give out XP.
I don't even remember this part.
What else? Oh, there's a dinosaur druid. So that's
there's
a
dinosaur druid. Yeah,
there's sure.
No, there's a some pretty cool looking art that we're getting for it. We'll be showing off some of that at the banquet.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe the cover and the iconic. So,
yeah, we've had the iconic for a while, and she is, well, you know, when you got Wayne Reynolds, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, we actually got to go back and forth with Wayne on that iconic more than we usually do, and it looks great.
Yeah, we had every once in a while Wayne deigns to visit the States, and so when we were originally talking about the shifter, and I was presenting at least what the shifter looked like in the very, very beginning, doing the design, he was sitting there with the sketch pad and showing us old sketches of similar things. He showed us one that I'm like, that's perfect, let's use that. And then we had to do something brand new, which is awesome and great. So, and I haven't even seen a clear picture of the cover. So,
oh yeah,
I haven't. I've seen the shifter, but not the cover.
Yeah, I've seen the cover. Yeah, so, and, I think both the damn covers just came like a couple weeks ago. So.
Oh, yeah. So
well, I'm looking forward to that at the banquet. Right. Better get a table that's close to the projector.
What about you, Mark? What's some of your favorite parts?
So let's see. First, is anyone here playing Iron Fang Invasion? Because I am, and constantly, like, I'm a player. I'm not the GM, but the GM is doing stuff, and I'm like, oh gosh, yeah. If we had Ultimate Wilderness, we'd have something like specifically for exactly this thing. Like it's happened like 4 times. Like we're out in the wilderness, and we're like, we need to like kitbash some stuff. Oh yeah, we got that in Ultimate Wilderness. So I need to figure out what the weather is, because when it is a downpour, you guys are all crappy at survival and you don't have enough shelter.
That book also has rules for tornadoes and floods and stuff like that. Yeah. So it goes both ways.
Yeah. So
GM might have a tornado launcher.
Right.
There is some cool stuff for disasters in there too, but I would say just having seen for myself firsthand in a wilderness survival AP, those rules in the section you were talking about with the rules are really good. I would say, let's see, what are some other standouts? So one thing that's really cool is, as Steven was saying, we did pick up some stuff from player companions. Obviously, the vast majority of the book is new, but one of the cool things we were able to pick up is the wood kineticist element, which means that we've got all of it from the other sources, the basic kinesis that didn't fit in the original source, plus now it's in the core rules line, so we can expand it some more. And then maybe my other favorite is the new race, but should I tell them?
Yeah. Or well, let's do a little, like, if you were,
okay.
So we're doing 3 new races in here. I'm just kind of curious.
Only one is totally new, though. The other has got a lot of cool content for races you might know that are underserved.
So you know, 2 have been printed before, and we're just expanding those out. And 1 is totally new. What if this were your book? What kind of races would you put in there?
Lizardfall.
What's that?
Lizardfall.
Yeah, one for Lizardfall. I can see that.
Brian Gorin.
What's that?
The Gorin.
Gorin, okay.
And we have our first
one out of 3.
Yeah. Gorin's the nerd.
And they are.
And they are. one of the things we've got 2 plant races in the race section of the book.
Gathlane is the other one, other than that Steven said the other one is a plant. But
and
it's
the other
new
one is a plant. And of course the plant immunities made sense way back in the day. But we've expanded what plant creatures can actually be. And so, yeah, we basically sit there and say, yeah, you have immunity to sleep, and we're going to give you some feat chains that might give you some of the resistances that are more plant-like. But yeah, and it was really troublesome with the new race, because its subtype also had some immunities that we didn't
give to the PC. So, well, the real issue, I would say, just for plants was you say it's a nerf, and it does nerf it because, you know, being immune to, like, 50 things is very strong, but it actually first came up that we really locked it in, that I remember you really locked it in, Stephen, because the immunities that plants have to polymorph is making it hard to write, a, like, a Goron druid archetype because you're immune to your own wall shape. And so we had to be like, no, you're not immune to your own wild shape in this archetype. And Steven's like, we can just get rid of these immunities overall. And like, there was like a bard archetype. And we're like, you're not immune to your own inspired courage. And so we're like, let's take that out of the archetypes and just get rid of these immunities that are actually hampering you, but also making you overpowered against certain opponents.
Which mostly when PCs have immunity. Right, because you've picked up a race that's traditionally a monster, was originally designed as a monster, and I've seen this firsthand on tables, and I'm sure you do too. It's everybody remembers their immunities when it's in your favor, and nobody remembers the immunities when it's not.
Yep.
So you know, if you had a plant critter or an, you know, shape shifting druid, you'd be all like, well, that makes perfect sense until you read the immunity line and figured out, oh, I can't.
The enemy's like baleful polymorph. You're like, no, I'm immune to that. Now I turn into a bird.
Wait.
So we just sort of cut the Gordian knot on that one. It's like, yeah, you're a PC. It's a little bit different. You know, if there always when you expand a game in the way that we've expanded Pathfinder, and you think something's a good idea, and then you realize, oh, I wish I could go back and sort of change that. Well, the great thing about books like these is a sidebar can absolutely change that in a particular case, and that's what we did.
But all back right. to the guessing game, oh, you yeah, think the they can game. Guess the new race.
So we
you
know
said
it's
a plant, and it has a subtype.
And it has a subtype.
So that actually makes it pretty easy if you're really encyclopedic. Because there aren't many plant subtypes.
No.
What is it? Name any plant subtype.
You got it. Yeah, so we're doing the Vine Leshy as a playable race. It's a brand new Leshy. Still created, still has the same backstory. We had Linda design it, because if I didn't let Linda design it, she'd probably stab me. And I like to keep on Linda's good side.
That's probably true. I mean, there was a fan-made scenario put out on April Fool's where Linda set it up as a Leaf Leshy assassin.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
both
yeah.
a Leshy and someone who would probably stab you.
Yeah, so. That's true. Although I was the only paladin.
You were kicking a pig in there.
That pig was bad.
But
that's where bacon comes from. You were doing a service to the internet.
Wait, if the pig was evil and he kicked it, does that mean
he loses
his power?
I didn't say he was
evil.
Oh,
okay.
Let's not think about alignment too much.
Yeah, well, that's a great thing about In the Wilderness. It's not about alignment. It's about whether you survive until the next day.
Right. So, yeah, so we've got three new playable races. They're very different than a lot of the playable races that we have out there. You know, even after the Advanced Race Guide, right, we realize that more and more people, especially... You know, I'm an aging dude who started playing Dungeons & Dragons in 1980, and back then, you know, being an elf was weird. We do realize that more as the games move forward, people want to have more diverse race choices. So this is our first opportunity to kind of open that up a little bit with some races that probably grognards of my generation might think are.
And they got all sorts of new rules content for that, because of course two of them are races you've heard of before, but did they have lots of racial archetypes and spells and feats and stuff, and a Leshy kineticist archetype? They did not have that.
So yeah, they get a very advanced race guide treatment rather than a core rulebook treatment on the race right now. So right out of the gate, you've got a lot of options, which also helps with the plan type. And then we move on to the Shifter, and let me explain a little bit about the Shifter. We knew we wanted, as we're kicking around new classes, what would be fun, and what do people want to see, and we, you know, look on the message boards and see what folks are excited about. It became pretty obvious that a martial shape-changing class was very desirable. Now, that is also problematic because we wanted it to work. Play well with wild shape, that the Druid has, because we've got a bunch of interesting feats that they can latch on. We could expand feats like that. And Wild Shape, mostly for a new player, can be really daunting. It basically goes, hey, yeah, go into this other book and just poke around until you find something. And when we design classes, we not only design them for the folks that have been playing, you know, Pathfinder and similar games for years and know the system really well, but also with an eye to, I'm a new player, I'm very excited about this concept, how easily can we get them on board and quickly? So one of the things that we did with that is we sort of latched on the aspects from the Hunter. And so in the beginning, and also, you know, Wild Shape isn't something the Druids get until a higher level. You sort of fiddle with your shape. You decide on an aspect. It gives you some kind of bonuses that are similar in some ways to what the Hunter also does. You get, of course, claw natural attacks. You will see the iconic at the banquets, and she's got cool claws. That's the only spoiler.
First level, constant claws all the time.
I love her already.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's... And then, for a new player, and even a person who's just coming in and playing the Shifter, it's cool, it's evocative, and relatively simple. And then later on, when you get Wild Shape, you can turn into the full creature. Your adjustment with claws, because as you get higher level, your claws get better. You can basically focus that into that Wild Shape. And then the cool thing about those aspects, and you get more and more of them as you go up the level, is you can layer on the aspects onto your shape changer. And so and as you go higher level, you can create all sorts of interesting melded shapes. I'm going to take the form of bear, and then I'm going to take the aspect of owl, and all of a sudden you're an owl bear. And then for the bear, what was that?
You said man bear pig. Yeah, if you turn into a bear and use boar, then you're a man bear pig.
So, yeah, I'm really excited to see what people do with it. So, mechanically, that's what the class is. We also wanted it to tie it very strongly, at least the base class, to the story of the Druids. So, Shifters also, they know Druidic. They are often part of Druidic circles. They have very similar alignment restrictions and follow similar codes. And then to capitalize on that, we talk a lot about what's the green fae.
Yeah, the green fae is in there.
And we've also got some information about the Feywild, or not the Feywild.
The first world. No Feywild.
I've been doing this too long. The first world. So not only, you know, did we want to create something mechanically sound, we also wanted it to tie into the entire story of Pathfinder in general and our campaign world in specific.
Because, like, the Green Faith is not only a really good, specific example of a druidic faith, but it also, like, it's a generic enough kind of druidic faith that even if you're running in a different campaign setting that has their own druids, you probably have something that's like the Green Faith that you could still be interested in, use some of the details about the Green Faith with your equivalent in your campaign setting too.
And the stuff on the first world, we were just sick of in the core book saying, you know, the world with core.
Yeah, what was it? The chaotic realm of the Fae.
Yeah, and so something like that. Yeah, we just call it the first world, and so. So that's what we did. It's not. It's going to be a little bit more general than the campaign setting book on First World. But for those people who may not be subscribed to those lines or pick up those lines, it gives them a really good introduction. For those of you who are hardcore, a lot of it will probably be old hat.
But there is a lot of new face stuff too. Like, we have some of Fae stuff that you're going to find from being hardcore in the other books, but we've got Fae transformation spells to turn into a Fae and, like, be cool while doing it, because some of those Fae don't really have stuff that you might imagine was cool from transforming. And that was not in any of the First World books.
No, yeah, that's true. And we've got, you know, hazards and things that you could slip into not only the world, but into your first world adventures as well.
So what's everyone's favorite archetype here? You said the
dinosaur droid. Although, I'm pretty delighted with, is it the... We've got archetypes for animal companions and familiars.
Yeah.
There's one that turns your familiar into kind of a jerk. The prankster? The one that's
I wrote that. High five.
One of this familiar's powers is that when you scry on your familiar, he can decide, well, I'm actually doing my homework. I'm not partying. I'm doing my homework. So, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it can fake the empathic link, too. I'm in trouble!
It's like, no, I just wanted a copy. But you're here, so where's my copy?
All right. Yeah, so that's a good point, though. So when Steven said we've got all the familiar and animal companion archetypes, I think, from previous sources, but we've expanded on that to nearly twice its original length with a whole bunch of new stuff. Your familiar can be a jerk. Your animal companion can be like a little bit dragon in its backstory, and there's a lot of other things in between for that. I would say, I think my favorite archetype, it's hard, even though I was asking the question, but it's probably, there's this kineticist archetype that probably has like the character sheet and probably Hero Lab stuff that the Hero Lab people are going to kill me for. So that's what, sorry guys, you have your universal talents, and that's fine. But if you take a talent in one of the elements, like let's say fire, you get one for each element, and then depending on what terrain you're in, you switch to the different ones. So like, it's not that hard in play because it's like the GM just tells you, now you're underground, use your earth stuff. But when you're building the character sheet, you have to be like, okay, I've got this set for when I'm underground and when I'm in the woods. And I nearly played that in Iron Fang, but then I didn't.
Okay, well, I
can do that. he's back. Yes. Yeah, you have to code that in now, and it's going to change, whenever they switch terrain. It's going to be great.
Well, Mark, I love you. I love you, so there.
Okay, there you go.
Favorite terrain is easy.
Yeah, it's favorite terrain, but you switch your suite of power.
I'm going to change it so you switch your race, too.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. You
like,
can change
like you're in the forest, you're like just a
and
gap
then
you walk into the desert.
It
has to be more complicated. So if you walk into the desert, you should turn into an Ifriti.
Okay.
You go into like outer space, you turn into a star.
So outer space, I listed outer space in there very cagely because the void element's not in the RPG line of like, if you're somewhere other than these terrains, like maybe outer space, and you think you have an appropriate element, you can do that too. So that you can...
Wink, wink, notch, notch.
Yeah, the void. Yeah. So yeah, you turn into a star, it'll be great. What about you, Steven?
So I was... I think my favorite one, and it's definitely a difficult one, is one of the new shifter archetypes. So we wanted the shifter base class to have a very strong link to the game in general and the campaign, the story of that. But archetypes are a way that we can kind of go, not the shifter. And the ooze.
Oh yeah, that one was freaky. That's on my top five.
Is really good. Not only because it's reminiscent of a favorite constable from a science fiction show. In fact, I even think it sleeps in a bucket where it can't sleep in a bucket.
Well, because it can't keep its form when it's not concentrated,
right,
so it's going to have to sleep in a bucket.
I thought that one, while difficult to put together, was really clever and fun, and gives people a chance to play a character in the game that is new and interesting and different.
So you can have the Wonder Twins, who goes the shape of the bucket.
Right,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
You get Jaina, it's just the regular shifter, and then it works out. That one's really good.
Yeah.
There's also some that are like simpler but still cool. Like I kind of like the Slayer Avalancer, whose entire deal is that he falls on people.
Right.
Now, that might not sound awesome, but like, then you get an ability called Death from Above, where you like they die if you fall on them from enough distance. And
I've had friends who played barbarians where the only thing they did was dive on people.
Okay, well, this is that guy, but with a class that like supports it with its features.
Yeah.
Let's see.
New feats, new spells.
Yeah, there's new feats, there's spells.
Said that there was equipment.
Oh, yeah, there's equipment.
Oh, yeah.
I think that, if I recall correctly, I didn't go deep into equipment. There was an equipment section that had some mundane and useful equipment in the wilderness that may have finally clarified that those spring-loaded vestiges can hold, like, certain items that before were, like, in Venture's armor, it wasn't clear. So.
Yeah, we have a new class of magic item, magic plants, where you can plant them, and so, you know, you want a good berry bush. We tell you how to craft that and what it does and all sorts of stuff like that. With also, you know, we give a lot of examples, and it's basically a kind of seasonal spell effect. And we give the rules so you can create those and price them out and everything else. So that was a lot of fun. That was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
As far as equipment stuff goes, mostly because we've done so much equipment.
Yeah, it's a smaller chapter.
There's not a lot in there.
At first we were going to have it much larger, and then we're all like, well, that's in this book.
I think having a smaller section just where everything in it is cool
right.
is something I like. And the plants are, that like, you don't just say, oh, this is a plant, it does the same thing. But, like, you literally have a plot of land somewhere where you grew a tree, and this tree is giving you, like, some kind of fire-resistance pepper or something like that. Like, it tells you how many grows over what period of time and which what is growing season it is.
Yeah.
So
it's definitely, you know, a lot more campaign-oriented than anything else. But, I mean, I think that a lot of the book shines more in your long-running campaign than one-offs. There are plenty of, you know, hazards and tornadoes and fire-nados and all sorts of
tornadoes. Fire monsters.
And, you know, and stuff that you can just throw at it whenever you want. but yeah, it's definitely a loaded book with a lot of things that. Well, I always hope that people will be very happy with.
So I think one thing we have more of by a lot is Verminous Companions that we had John Copton write a bunch more of those.
We got Plant Companions as well.
Yeah, because there weren't that many of those, right? Because the Plant Companions were just an elf, tree singer, archetype. So there's some more of those. There's more people who can use those in this book. And more vermin to sort of round out the vermin list. Because we've got some really nice giant vermin like throughout the different bestiaries that came out after the Vermin Companions.
Yeah, we had John Compton and Miko Kelly do the bulk of the new design for the Animal Companions and Familiars. And Pan, every once in a while, they'd have me scramble into a computer. it's like, oh yeah, I guess that's a thing.
That is really good stuff.
I guess we should probably illustrate that one.
Blights are really more of a GM tool. You don't really want your player characters having blight friends because that kind of makes them too friendly. well, I guess there are the rules for like vampire orchids and some weird hazards that you can throw in there to help blights.
I think blights. And owning both Ultimate Wilderness and Best 36 and using it together as a GM with the Blights is going to be great, but there's nothing explicit that says, and this is about Blights. But it was just a very well-timed. I'm sure that you orchestrated this.
Yeah. Yep, I did.
See?
Let's see.
All right, let's see. Well, yeah, then they might have some questions, right? They start shooting in your head.
For the shifter, was there anything related to aquatic or amphibious type shifting?
So there's a lot of aquatic stuff in Aquatic Adventures campaign setting that is about to come out. And because of that, we didn't have quite as much, because it was going to be a very recent release before Ultimate Wilderness, not quite as much section on underwater in Ultimate Wilderness. Like, we were discussing that at the meeting for it.
Not as much in the initial release. I don't think I can even remember an archetype that deals with that, but expect that to change relatively soon.
One of the core elements of the ship is that they have these claws, and they could either be bird claws or cat claws.
care of laws.
There is just not a lot. You don't really, getting like Fims doesn't really mesh well. So it changes such a fundamental core concept of the shifter that down the line, sure, we might do an archetype that does something like that. But right now we want to focus on the shifter. I mean, the shifter itself is brand new. So it's like one of the things we don't necessarily want to do too much is overwhelm you with additional options. We want you to get a chance to see the shifter, this raw, pure shifter too. So. But absolutely. There's a
you have shark mouths.
There's like a barbarian. I think it's a barbarian.
There's some water stuff.
There's a lot of familiars that, like, if you choose them and you're not playing an aquatic campaign, you just build your friend.
And Adam said he wants
a pufferfish familiar, which is a great one.
Oh, that one's cool.
It's not very huggable. It's not very
eatable. Don't do that. I think Adam said he wants to put Aquatic Adventures up on the PRD someday, so that'll add some water options. My guess is someday down the line there'll be a shifter who uses tentacles instead of claws, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Speaking of kineticists, is Void Kineticist getting any love this book?
Well, it's not really nature-y, so...
It's sort of nature.
Void is actually a weird element because it's not necessarily what people think it is, it seems. So that, on one level, means that we could do a lot more with it. It's not really... outer space as much as it is just nothing.
The nothingness.
Like, the source of ideas and stuff like that. So
when we
did it
ultimate
really
nothing.
it's just not, it doesn't fit the themes of nature that much. Who's calling out questions so we don't have to?
Oh yeah, Steven, why don't you call on people?
I know you probably can't get too mechanical, but is the shifter a full BAB class or three quarters?
It's a Marshall shifter, so full.
Okay, 120.
It gets a little gnarly.
So other than wild shape, is there anything else that the shifter shares with Druid?
Religions?
Yeah, stuff.
One of the core concepts is, like, if you've got, like, all of the deity, like the good guy deities, have like clerics serving them, and then on the other side they have paladins serving the same thing. So the shifter is kind of sort of building a paladin role for the green thing. They're the military magical strong arm that don't really have spells.
If you can imagine druids in a circle chanting, doing a ritual, and there's this guy who's like got a little bit of animal aspects on and is just standing there and guarding that ritual, that is the shifter.
Or, you know, you're trying to crash the party.
Yeah.
We'll go with you. The shifter specifically being functioning on claws, natural attacks, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any sort of archetype and/or compatibility with things like feral combat training, opening up all the styles and all of that craziness that is throughout all of the player campaigns and everything else?
Well, so that's kind of interesting. So when we poured over things from the player companions, even though we know what's sitting in the player companions, especially Mark with his encyclopedic knowledge of those kind of things, a lot of times we tend to design with only the core books in mind when we're doing core books. We'll troubleshoot for that kind of thing. So the answer is kind of yes, but not specifically.
Yeah, so like that stuff is out there. But we're not going to balance the stuff in the core books, assuming you're doing some weird build from the player companions. And as a group, I'd say like a home GM, home players, get together and decide which player companions you want to combine up. Sometimes they can cause unusual effects if you have a lot of them. You might be like, how about the shifter plus pick two player companions that you want to add on or something like that.
So... In some ways, the player companions allow us a little bit more flexibility in design. We can do crazier things in there without it affecting what we call the core game. And then we can see what those things do, especially as they're implemented in organized play. But when we're designing core line books, we kind of, and it's now a massive stack, we kind of mostly keep the core in mind for that rather than
shooting. It's a little more experimental out there. We pull the best of what we find and stay a little more conservative in the core.
So are shifter fans from
wearing metal armor like the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course, that's actually one of the areas that the editors came back to me after late in development. It's like, well, it says they can't wear this, can't wear that, but they pointed out that since we did the core rulebook where if you don't wear metal leather, if you don't wear metal armor, you have padded leather, hide, that's it.
Yeah.
That's not the case anymore. So there's all sorts of non-leather armor or non-metal armor options for shifters. And honestly, if you're a shifter, you're probably not going to want to be heavily armored anyway. There's a lot of same reasons like rangers and barbarians don't do it because you're just holding out. I mean, even beyond game elements, it's like, do you really want to cover up your cool bird claw-handed beak-faced character in metal armor so it looks just like a soldier down the street?
In a lot of ways, because this is very... very different martial class, is it also has some natural defenses. It's almost got its own version of the monk, I'm not wearing armor.
Yeah.
I'm a badass, because we thought that naked shifters would be a lot more fierce than clothed shifters. Back there.
Will there be more stuff on monsters you can say, like, for example, like owlbears, mooses, and stuff?
Not really. I mean, there's some archetypes like you're hinted at earlier. There's like one that you can throw on your animal commands to make them more draconic. There's one I think that lets you make animal commands more aberrant.
Yeah.
There's a Fey Touch one. So you can get a little bit of the monsters into your animal or your companions. But again, that's for a book. Whenever we do books, there's so much content. We could make books like 7,000 or 8,000 pages long, and then we would die.
Yeah.
So a lot of times when we pick a book like this and we pick a topic, there's so many things to go in there. We really have to focus in and say, well, we can't do this because we wouldn't do that because something like a Chul or something like that is not really, or a Mabogo isn't really nature. It's more monstrous, so it doesn't really have a place in a book called Ultimate Wilderness, which is kind of more rooted in.
I was just thinking more of the wilderness theme, like planet trees and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's stuff in there that's leaking in, but it's really focusing more on, certainly on plants. Magical plants are in there, which are not real. You can have like a little miniature Venus flytrap.
I think there is an Eidolon plant thing for the Unchained Summoner in there. So
there's some stuff in there, but it wasn't the focus of the book.
And I mean, and just kind of on a philosophical note, is mostly when we do bestiaries, animal is when something's an animal, we always look at it like what if this thing's a companion, and mm-hmm. and we can sort of balance it that way, and specifically balance it that way. If we were to open all the things that were somewhat themed for that, that would take a lot of work. And
I think it would be for the detriment of a lot of the monsters in the game that are more interesting if they can like breathe out like burning snakes that turn you into lava and then command your blood to attack your friends.
Yeah.
You can't really give that to a tiger.
Right? Or you couldn't really give wish to something that like is one of the PC's pets.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that might break the game a little bit.
Just maybe.
Just a little bit.
You mentioned that there was a section on new poisons and growing your own poison and stuff. Let's talk about that a little.
There's a section on harvesting, basically harvesting poisons from creatures, be they like, we got a picture of, I think the alchemist just grabbed a spider and is squeezing it over a bucket or something like that. and yes, it's milking poisons, harvesting poisons from plants and stuff like that. There's a, it's a new trick that you can teach your verm, your poisonous animal companion. It's like, milk! And they just stick their mouth in a bucket and squirt poison into it for you.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a bunch of options.
And in terms of harvesting, when there was a player companion out recently, like the Monster Hunter type of, that had a little bit about harvesting from monsters, and a lot of people were like, well, yeah, I guess it's a player companion, so it doesn't have space, but I really wish there was something that was like more comprehensive of what happens if I harvest from lots of different monsters and get pieces for my items.
Yeah, that's more of in the trophy. Yeah.
Right, but in Ultimate Wilderness, we had that space.
Yeah.
So we've got something cool.
So yeah, I don't think there's a whole lot of new poisons. Just, you know, poisons are are kind of a weird thing in the game. They can be very powerful or not very powerful. They tend to be very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But we still want you to play with them. And so in a lot of ways, this is a more inexpensive way of getting poisons
right.
for your...
You can get one temporarily based on the things that you're fighting. And you right. can't just like just say, ah, kill the purple worm. I've stockpiled 1,000 doses automatically or
right.
something. But it could, you don't have to pay thousands of gold to do that.
Also, nice people don't use poison. That's just a rule.
Why? You're an anti-paladin. How are you saying that?
I'm making a statement about nice people, not me.
Okay.
So, nature is like a massive part of going back to like Lord of the Rings. But any kind of like first or even, you know, second level party with a spellcaster isn't really challenged by it. Is there any sort of like man versus wild aspect?
There's, as you've seen in, I think it was Ultimate Intrigue, there was a section like spells, in Spells of Intrigue, where it goes through, like, here's how Charm Person actually is intended to work. It's not the spell that you cast at first level to make the king your pet. There's a section in this book that talks about here's how these spells work in the wild. And there's like, I mean, one of the classic examples is somebody's, when we made Create Water, and can't you cast it well every day. We're like, well, why don't you go out and turn every desert into a ocean? And it's like, well, because the human lifespan isn't that long. I mean, the spell Create Water doesn't create that much water. So it's going in and talking about how these spells do sort of actually interact with the natural world and all of that. But it also gives the GM, like we were saying, some of the hazards and stuff like that, some other elements about how to handle like nature versus wild stuff.
Mm-hmm.
To a certain extent as well, if you want to run an adventure where you're like doing survival type stuff like that, you've got two choices. You can basically just tell the player characters you can't actually have create water or this spell or that spell, and that's one option. Or you can just require them to make fighters and rogues and you know, not spellcasters. Or, because I ran into this back several years ago when I was writing Souls for Smuggler's Ship, which is all about you get stranded on a desert island or a tropical island. And you have to survive on this island. And one of the problems there is that one of the big elements of survival in like all this TV shows and stuff like that is like where do you get water? And so that adventure had to work for the group that doesn't have a cleric or somebody in the party that can cast Create Water at will. But it also had to account for that. So there's all sorts of other weird things you can put into the game that put other stresses on the party. Rather than searching for water, they're searching for somewhere to hide from this, like, you know, flying chupacabra that might be attacking them every night or something like that. So there is
something like that in
yeah,
there.
Dropping blood-drained goats in the middle of their camp and then starving them on. So there's some elements and some talk in there in the Mastering the Wilderness section that helps GMs want to run more survival-based games.
And, you know, it's always good if you want to run those kind of games, and the book does talk about it a whole lot, but, you know, we take a lot of things for granted, and there's a lot of tropes in the Pathfinder role-playing game, like, this is the territory, and here's a map, right? But the world looks very different when you're on ground level, and you don't know what's beyond that hill and everything else, and creating that kind of sense of the unknown and the dangers that are out there is probably best served in the narrative structure of your game. I usually don't show players a map of the area they're adventuring in until way long in the campaign. And then they go, oh crap, that's what it looks like? That's not what I had in my head. Or I have them draw a map and whatnot. As a meditation, just go out and get lost in the woods.
Somewhere in Oregon.
And if you survive,
we are not liable for anything that happens.
Yeah, I mean, even in our modern world, like, you know, here in Washington State, Oregon, like, this place can get very deadly very quick. And because we live in cities and have plenty of water and can go to convenience stores, we sort of forget that. But building that kind of suspense in your game is always a heck of a lot of fun.
Witches in this book.
Yes.
Yes. Witches specifically have a section in the Archetypes and Class Features chapter.
And of course, we've got a bunch of new familiars as well.
New familiars,
yep.
New spells. Yeah.
Yep.
Witches are one of the, I would say, of all the arcane classes, they're probably the ones that are the most nature oriented.
Yeah.
And they're the ones who have the most stuff in here.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a close call, though. I think in one of the initial outlines, I left the witch out, and then everybody was like, Steve, written all the...
Also, the Brawler has a whole section in here, which it's not very nature-oriented, but it didn't... The Brawler has never gotten an archetype since Advanced Class Origins.
Yeah, there's the bear-beating Brawler.
Yeah, well, no, but there's some weird Brawlers.
See, now I'm just going to make up archetypes.
There's one that has, like, poison that poisons you, and yep. Then, like,
there's
another...
a Brawler that, like, puts logs on his hands.
Right.
Yeah, there you go, the log Brawler.
She asked the worst question. Hags and are traps cheaper than wizards?
So hags are going to be in Blood of the Coven, which is a player companion.
I mean, again, that's the difference between something that is of the wilderness and something that lives in the wilderness. And for hags, sure, the green hag lives in the woods, but like not all of them. Like night hags live on other plains, right. And like. So it's not really a topic that is appropriate really for a player focused book.
But
what was the other one?
Traps. There is an expansion to the wilderness trap system from the player that wildernessy player companion that says, "Hey, you can kitbash something in the woods that you're going to work in that spot for a lot cheaper and a lot faster."
I just didn't see the city trap cost system working.
Right, and so we had something like that in, what is the name of the player companion? It was something of the Wild, Heroes of the Wild, and so we've expanded on that in Ultimate Wilderness.
Back there.
Is there anything about the companions, about much smaller companions? Because a lot of the companions are large and harder to get here.
Like you're speaking.
Some of the stuff you might get is familiar, but as animals,
not really. I mean, there's not really, the game doesn't really work well if you have like really big familiars because they're supposed to be tiny little things that like sit in your hat or pocket or whatever like that. And the vice versa is also holds true. You don't really. The game is built so that you can have that your animal companions or things that you can ride or you can send out and fight for you or stuff like that. To the extent that we did do something like a mouse animal companion
or a gerbil
or something really tiny like that, it wouldn't really work well with the rules that's set up and the themes that we want people to have when they're playing druid or something like that.
So we do have something. It's not all the way into like mouse science, but there's always been some animal companions that started small and then you have an option to make them bigger, and you always do because the other option isn't that great. And there's a few things in Ultimate Wilderness that incentivize you to have a small animal companion and keep them small. So that's not tiny or diminutive, but it sure is a lot smaller than those huge Norse rhinoceros or giant tiger that's trampling around usually. So
who doesn't want a squirrel animal companion?
Most people.
Me.
Is there anything that ties the shifter to the likes of lycanthropes? Or skinwalkers, anything like that, like maybe like a shifter that stays in a more bestial form, kind of like.
Yeah, there's some archetypes that deal with that.
There's
yeah.
one that sort of can sometimes get out of control a little bit.
Yeah,
it's the base shifter is very much not a lycanthrope though, and it's not
right.
really. It's specifically different from those types of characters, and yeah, which is on purpose because you want people to have different approaches to building characters.
Yeah.
Somebody might want to do a wolfman that's a werewolf or Rugru, Master of Six or Shifter, so.
Right, and like the Mooncursed Barbarian is sort of like the I'm out of control with the wildness and range, where the base shifter, like you could be a skinwalker or Rugru who's like, I love wolves and I'm going to do wolf for shifter with the base shifter.
Yeah, it's
but then the shifter power isn't really your lycanthrope power at that point. It's sort of something you took because of your lycanthrope heritage.
Time for a few more questions, probably.
Yeah, we got about 10 minutes, so let's do
or
two
maybe
more questions.
Less than 10,
yeah,
because...
So,
the kinesis has already been mentioned a couple of times. Are you guys expanding on the biokinesis?
What? The biokinesis? You mean the phyto?
Yeah.
So, as mentioned previously, all of the stuff for the wood element is being put into there, but there's not anything Well, no, there is a very small amount of things that were not at least somewhere before, but now that they're collected in a core rulebook line, they can be used and referenced in a lot more places.
Talking about poisons earlier, what about diseases? That's a natural hazard of being out in the wilderness as well.
I don't think we have a real disease. I mean, one of the things is even though we've got kind of a section that's a little bit more GM-facing, most of the things that we put in the book, of course, with some of the exceptions we talked about, are for players to have a good time, not to wither away and die.
So you could use the disease section from Horror Adventures pretty well if you want a horrific disease, or Unchained Poisons and Diseases, but... The reason that poison's in there is actually not to, like, make poisons even worse for you in the wild, but to make it so, like, I came across this, I'm going to milk it. And usually, if you see someone with smallpox in the wilderness, your first thought is not, like, I'm going to collect some samples into this vial.
It's also, like, poisons in the core rulebook are set up as something you can buy. There's things, there's prices, and we don't have a pricing structure for, like, disease. That's kind of, on one level, that's, it's kind of just gross and creepy.
How much for devil chills?
All right, last question.
Can you set up a bet for me? What?
No, I don't do that.
Okay. What are the save progressions on the shifter? If you can mention that, if that's not too specific.
I actually can't remember.
No, I can't remember it.
I have a good guess, but I'm not sure it's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
No, the correct answer is like we're holding some surprises back for the book's release, and I couldn't tell you right now, but you'll have to wait.
I think you could probably imagine what they are. And if you're wrong, well, then you lose the bet.
Yeah, but I'm an idiot for not getting it right.
Well, no, you don't know.
That was a quick question. We did one more.
So for the wilderness stuff, do you guys have sections for different types of wilderness, like versus cold temperate versus like the hot jungle?
Yeah, there's definitely all sorts of. It's not ultimate forest.
Right. Yeah. It's not all the types of wilderness. There just isn't a huge focus on underwater in that book because of the aquatic adventures. Because
we want most characters to use their feet.
Mostly you, and we want them to not die because they're in the area that they're adventuring.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
That could be an issue.
I mean, underwater, a lot of that stuff is specifically, since all of the core game assumes, you know, you can breathe and can't fly.
Well, I was thinking the difference between, like, a cold temperate forest in, like, Garrison versus the Mwangi Jungle.
Yeah,
there's definitely covering all of that stuff. Not necessarily by section, but throughout the entire book, you'll see something like, here's some animal companions that are from the jungle, whereas some are from the taiga, from pine forests over the mountains. So it's not actually organized in that way, but there are all sorts of...
Yeah.
But the natural disaster and stuff too, right?
Yeah, the natural disaster has, like, flash floods and tornadoes and, like I was mentioning, vampire orchids and thin ice. But also a lot of other stuff like volcanoes have appeared in Game Master Guide and Forest Fires are in the core rulebook. So one of the things that's the last chapter I'm developing right now, and I'm looking at doing at the very start of it, which is helpful. Helpfully in the turnover says this needs more stuff, so I have to come up with 1,400 words.
Oh boy!
Yay! Thanks. So I think what I'm going to do with that section is basically just sort of. Not quite an index, but basically sort of a chopping list. Like, if you want volcanoes, they're not in this book because we did it in this book. If you want something about, like, quicksand, check the core book. So it's going to have all of that stuff.
Right.
Yeah, I remember because I was doing Turtle That Fury recently, and I was trying to do how do you do a flash flood and
right.
A lot of stuff.
Flash floods, I know, are specifically one of the terrain hazards in this book, I think. We ordered artwork, so better.
I'm pretty sure they are in there. All right,
cool.
Well, we better let people for the next thing get into it.
Yeah, finally. Thank you very much, everyone.
Yay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to NoDirectionPodcast.com.